Welcome back to Talkville, the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. We've got a glorious episode for you today. We've got special guests. There's just so much to talk about. Look, we watch an episode. We discuss it with you. You call in with your questions. Join Patreon, patreon.com/Talkville, to support the podcast so we keep going. Without you, we couldn't do this podcast, period. TalkvillePodcast.com for tons of merch. Inside of You online store has tons of Smallville merch as well. We're on Cameo. We're doing a lot of cons. Come see it. All right. Talkville Podcast on all socials. If you go to my link tree on Instagram, the Michael Rosenbaum, there's all that stuff of our cons and this and that. And all the information in the show's description on the handles and the socials at Talkville Podcast. Without further ado, let's just ride into this baby. Let's get into season 3, episode 19, Memoria. All right. Title Memoria, aired April 28th, 2004. Director Miles Miller. Writers Al Goff and Miles Miller. Guest star Wayne Dalgish as young Lex. Martin Cummins as Dr. Lawrence Garner. He's been around a while. Allison Down as Lillian Luther. Terrence Stamp as the voice of Jor-El. Look, Clark. Kal-El. I can't do it. As Lex explores radical treatments to help him recover lost weeks while at Belle Reve, he opens up flashbacks to traumatic childhood memories that he had repressed and ends up putting his present-day close friends in danger. This is a freaking awesome episode. I'm just going to say it. I was like, holy crap, man. Miles, as the director, ripped into this one. And that's a daunting task coming in. You're the creator. Obviously, everyone's going to step up for you. But, you know, to take the helm, to dive into something like this, to come up to Vancouver when you've always been a writer and that's what you do well, to come up and tell the story, to direct, to give direction, you know, to actors, all that stuff is not easy. And but he got our respect pretty damn fast.
Well, there's an energy that every set has that you know, especially when you're a guest starring on a show, which I've done, you kind of step back from it and you're like, I'm just going to let you guys, I'm not going to get in the way here. Let me just, you know, and there's a, you know, the actors have their own little thing, the crew has their own little thing, and it's very challenging.
It is. Your bulge got in the way. We'll get into that later. This episode opens in a flashback with Lionel visiting Excelsior Academy, the school Lex is attending. He's called out because Lex is in hysterics and singing more lullabies to blanket Julian. Lionel tells his son that Julian is dead. He's dead, Lex. And when he goes to grab him off the ledge, Lex drops the blanket and starts shouting Julian's name. Julian! This transitions to modern time where Lex is on the edge at Luther Mansion screaming out Julian's name until Lana snaps him out of it.
By the way, how tough would it be to grow up in the same mansion where this all went down?
Yeah, where your brother died, where your mom probably killed herself.
Yeah. This
big haunting castle. And it was haunted. Remember that episode? Shimmer? Remember we did that?
That's right.
The next day, Lana goes to visit Clark in the barn and shares her concern for Lex's potential mental relapse. Clark explains that Lex has done this before and that she better stay clear of him. Forgetting that she was trampled by a horse earlier this season, Lana tells him that Lex is her friend. She wants to be there for him.
Just some very, very sexy farm work by Clark there.
Good.
I think that was intentional.
Some sexy Clark work?
Just
Clark work?
The buys were on full display. The guns were out. The white t-shirt was very, very sexy for Tom.
He was running that farm work like Clark work.
Get keeping it, that shirt work. Clean, too. It was the cleanest white shirt in a barn I've ever seen.
Clark goes to visit Lex, who shrugs off the incident as embellished sleepwalking. Clark pushes further, but Lex reminds Clark that he found him asleep on the road last year and didn't nag him about it.
True.
Touché. Toupé. Lex leaves to visit Dr. Garner from Summerholt, and the two discuss Lex's spontaneous memories. And Garner tells Lex that these occurrences indicate their new treatment regimen is working. We then cut to a scene to see the treatment in action as Lex gets lowered into a tank of greenlit water with wires connected throughout his body. I remember not liking this because it made me look extra skinny and weird. I was like, oh, gosh. It's just the angles. And that's the only thing I was like, you know, it was just me not liking what I looked like. This sends Lex into another flashback. This time he is at his 12-year-old birthday party and nobody's shown up. So sad. It was so sad. Lionel tells his son that they're all just jealous.
Well, by the way, I'm just looking at this scene now. The wide shot of you in the tank, your bulge is hidden in shadow. And you'll see later, Clark's is like fully on display.
We'll get into the bulge when we get to interview a couple of people. We snap back to reality time and Clark is shocked to see the experimentation going on. He decides to confront Lex as he leaves Summerholt. Lex tells Clark that he's willing to risk the danger of working with Dr. Garner as long as it means he remembers everything he lost in his weeks at Belle Reve.
Put out, Kent. Put out.
Yeah, beat it, dude. Come on, put an egg in your shoe and beat it. Clark is always just prying, man. Prying. It's like, come on, dude. You're in high school, man. Go like, what do kids do in high school?
Play football. Go hang out with Pete.
Yeah. Left with no other options, Clark pays a visit to Lionel in Metropolis. Clark asks Lionel to shut down Summerholt to help save his son. Lionel turns down the request, but then Clark brings up Lionel's parents' mysterious deaths. After this, Lionel flips a switch, literally and metaphorically, as he turns on a TV show footage of Belle Reve, where Lex tells Clark...
I mean, that was very conveniently queued up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He presses a button, and it's on.
Well,
there wasn't like hours of IT work, like, it's just a blue screen. Now try the other input. Now the other one. Like, they weren't like just, there's no way it was that easy.
Well, maybe for Lionel it is.
I don't know.
The next day, Lionel takes this information, confronts his son, warning him to stay away from Summerholt and that it's foolish and will likely cause another psychotic break. I'm on drugs, Dad. As he says this, the room around Lex becomes dark. He drops his glass and he's transported to another flashback. Similar to the episode Shattered, young Lex is looking through a peephole. This time his parents are arguing about his mother's postpartum depression and her desire for a divorce. Yeah, that's a lot. He experienced a lot, this Lex Luthor, didn't he? I really like the mom. I like Lillian. I think she was a really good actor, and she stepped up, man. Everybody stepped up in this. Everybody was good. We transitioned back to present day for a split second and then back to flashback where young Lex is frantic, pleading to his father for help after trying to rock Julian to stop his crying. After discovering that Julian is dead, Lionel backhands his son.
Do you have green eyes?
Blue-green. They change, but blue-green.
Because little Lex has very green eyes as he's looking through that.
Mine are more blue. But yeah. Color of eyes change, I think, a little bit, don't they? No. Anyway,
again,
we snap back to the present day and Lionel trying to console his son by saying, Lex, son. He tells Lex he needs to stop worrying about the past and think about the future. Lionel then goes to visit Clark at the Kent farm. We learn that Jonathan is being held at the hospital longer than expected. Yeah. We don't see Jonathan Kent here in this episode. No, we don't.
He must have been filming something.
Yeah.
He's gone for two episodes.
Interesting.
I think he was prepping to direct the next episode.
Correct. He was.
Oh.
Lionel tells Martha to give his wishes to Jonathan and tells her there's always a job waiting for you at Luthor Corp should you want it, Martha. And then she walks upstairs kind of saying F you.
I don't know. There's a lot of heat there that you weren't sure maybe of things to come. Perhaps?
Do you think they've ever B-O-N-E-D?
I don't know what that means.
Boned?
Oh. I don't know. They get closer as the seasons go on, though. That's for sure.
I don't remember. Can't wait for that. Lionel then tells Clark if Lex's situation worsens, he will need to have Lex committed to Belle Reve permanently. Clark rushes to Summerholt to put an end to the experiments. He runs into Garner, but becomes weak as he stands next to the kryptonite pool. Instead of kicking the high schooler out, Garner tells Clark that his punishment will be to be a part of the research experiments. As the lab technicians start undressing Clark, who's ripped in the scene, Garner makes a call to Lionel. Turns out Lionel baited Clark into visiting Garner, and in return, Garner promised not to perform any more studies on Lex. Lionel shows up to accompany Garner in his first analysis of Clark, and at the time, Lex shows up to the lobby of Summerholt demanding to speak with Garner for cutting his treatment short. Turned away by the receptionist, Lex calls Lionel, accuses him of meddling with his treatment. He then tells his father that he better make time immediately because he remembers everything that happened while at Belle Reve. And this causes Lionel to leave the experiment room before Clark is examined. Not wanting to wait for Lionel, Garner proceeds with the experiment. He lowers Clark into the kryptonite pool, causing him to shake profusely. That was an intense scene. A lot of these scenes are intense, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember not being wanting to be in that green pool of water at all.
Who did? Knowing us, it probably did something to us, and we don't even know.
Was it actually green or was it lit green?
Yeah, it was green.
Or was it lit
no,
green?
It was green.
Huh. Damn.
I remember it being green. Clark flashes back to his earliest memory as a baby. We see Jor-El and Lara, his mother, putting him in the spaceship and preparing to send him off. This causes Clark to shake even more and start screaming, "Laura!"
I thought that shaking looked good. I do. Later when Lex comes in to save Clark, and Clark says, "Lex, help me," I was like, I must have done all this shaking and all this, you know, and all that stuff before, because the line reading was just exhausted.
Yeah, you were good. Your reaction was good. It was like, it's weird when I hit the thing open to save you, hit the glass, broke the glass, and I saw your face. When I was watching this, I go, man, they're still buddies. This is going to be sad when they're not. Like, he's trying to save his buddy, even though all this shit's already happened. Clark's reaction becomes more and more intense as electricity starts shooting out around the pool, and Clark starts shaking. His shaking intensifies. They attempt to shut it down, but it's too late. The experimentation room erupts, knocking out the technicians inside. Lex, as I said, rushes to the room to see what's going on and finds Clark strapped in and underwater. He saves his friend by bashing open the side of the pool and releasing the kryptonite solution. Now, you'd think at some point Lex and Lionel would bond over their fascination with Clark and put their differences aside to figure out the truth behind who he is. But that doesn't seem to be happening. The next night, Clark is recovering in his loft. Lex shows up to visit his friend. Lex questions why Clark continued to get involved with Summerholt. Clark explains he needed to get Lionel involved because he had no other options. He then tells him that the more and more Lionel get Lex go at it, the more similar they become. I like that. It's very true. It's like you're trying to fight with every ounce, every morsel in your body to not be, you know, your father. And, well, ultimately, we know what happens. Lex leaves, but as he walks down the stairs, he gets sent into another flashback. This time, we see young Lex walking into his baby brother's room and finding his mother suffocating Julian to stop the crying.
Big surprise.
I mean, big surprise. That was like, oh, my gosh. Because I was like, oh, my God, did Lex do this? Lex, son? Coupled with the flashback earlier, it looks like Lex was covering for his mother, who was having a traumatic episode that caused her to commit filicide. Filicide. I thought it was infanticide. Infanticide. But it's called filicide. The next day, Lex goes to visit his father at Luther Corp. We learn, luckily, through a newspaper headline that the hot doctor is in a coma and not dead. Conveniently, this allows Lionel to pin the entire situation where Clark was being tested on Dr. Garner. Lex then tells his father that his treatment at Summerholt allowed him to realize that he did not kill his baby brother, Julian. Lionel tells him to not besmirch his mother, and Lex blames her decision on Lionel being overbearing. This is wild. So up to this point in his life, Lex was under the impression that he killed his infant brother. How traumatic is that, that he really believes he did this? It was this block. And then he finds out that he didn't do it. And this whole time, his torn relationship with his father, it's all because of this. Suddenly, Lionel believes what Lex is saying. The realization leaves Lionel speechless and suddenly regretful of how his entire relationship with his son has been up to this point. And Lex finally tells his dad he just wants Lerv. We get played out to only the song in this episode, Immortal, Immortal by Evanescence. I don't know what that means. As Martha visits her son in the loft, as he is still recovering from the recent Summerholt experience, Clark talks to his adopted mother about his new memories of his biological mother. He says he wishes Laura could have met Martha to understand how good of a mom she is. And you know what? I love that the first words out of your mouth were Laura.
Yeah.
That was really cool. That was a very
nice
nuanced, sweet morsel of knowledge that we as an audience received. Talkville is brought to you by Factor. I love Factor. I spent so much money, Tom, going to the grocery store and then making meals and spending so much time, and then the ingredients get wasted and sometimes you don't even cook them, and or delivery services, and paying so much money. Factor meals you will absolutely love. These meals are made in 2 minutes. They're delicious. There's 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. You'll always have new flavors to explore. Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine. What are you waiting for? This stuff is just great. It comes to your door, you put it in the fridge, and you cook it when you want to. You're going to save so much money, and you're going to have great meals.
I enjoy going to eat it.
Yeah.
Does that sound weird?
It doesn't. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Help meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. No matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals.
Treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon.
Keep kitchen time to a minimum. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes. No shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up.
Enjoy effortless support for your lifestyle. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced.
Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced. Head to factormeals.com/talkville50 and use code talkville50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code talkville50 at factormeals.com/talkville50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Highlights and lowlights. I think this whole episode was a highlight. I think this is will go down as the top 5 episodes of Smallville, at least, you know. Yeah, intense, great character development, arcs, action. We had a lot. This is going to be a tough one for your favorite scene, which is coming up soon. The whole season has explored Lex's mental health, Castaway Island, Shattered, Belle Reve, flashback to his brother, working with Martin Cummins. Garner, he was always really pleasant to work with. Having Miles as a director, it was, I've talked about it. We'll talk about it when we actually, I'm just going to say it. We talked to Alan Miles. So get ready for that. It's coming up.
Do you think there's ever a world where you could interview Lex Luthor on Inside of You?
So just have me there with all the questions, answer him, and then come back. I'd have to shave my head or wear a really good ball.
It'd be crazy.
That'd be pretty dope. Interesting things to note. Kendall Cross provided the voice of Clark's birth mother, Laura. She also played a little girl's mother in Jitters and Clark's grandmother, Jessica Kent in Relic. John Schneider was busy prepping, as Tom said, for his directorial debut in the series, the next episode, Talisman. As a result, he didn't appear in this episode. Gary Hudson's FBI agent appearance in this episode was cut. The lead box Lex received from Lionel is the same one he gave Clark in Metamorphosis.
Ah, I thought I'd seen it before.
All right, without further ado, let's get into it. We have the creators of Smallville, Al Goff, Miles Miller. Miles directed this wonderful episode. We're going to get into it. We're going to talk to him about some fun things, some dark things. Let's just get into it. Welcome, Al Goff, Miles Miller. We are so excited and delighted to have you back. It's always a treat that you come on every season so far. And
well, thanks for having us.
Yeah. I'm just grateful that you want to do that still, that you still love the show and you still want to talk about it. And it's exciting.
It is exciting. So, you know, and you got it. It's, you know.
All right.
And insightful.
You saw when we were in Salt Lake City, the crowd that was there was like 5,000 people at our panel.
Dude, it was huge. That was insane. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the fact that, you know, the show's over 20 years old, but it still has these legions of fans from generations that some of whom weren't born when we were making the show.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's crazy. It really, and it's fantastic. I mean, and it's, I mean, you guys, it must be, you know, just like a dopamine hit every time you go to these things, you know, just to see how much people love it.
Well, they're dopamine hits.
Michael's always like, I don't know. And then we get there and it's like,
well, yeah, because some cons, right, you know, there's smaller cons and there's like, you know, 50 people in the audience. And I'm like, all right, well, we got to give them the same energy.
Yeah, but that was intense.
That one was intense.
That was great.
Before we start, I have a few questions you could ask. We want to ask from older episodes.
Yeah.
Ian Somerhalder as Adam Knight. There was a lot of rumblings that this was some sort of introduction of a Bruce Wayne character. Is there any truth to that? And if not, were there discussions for other actors down the road?
It was. I think that was a name we were clearly trying to, you know, put that out there. But we could never get Batman. Like, that was off. And especially at that point, it was off the table because Nolan was in literally making the Batman Begins at this point. So yeah, that was all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lois Lane. A couple episodes prior, Chloe uses this as her alias as a reporter. Was there any idea of having her become Lois Lane with this in mind, or was this just a fun throwaway?
There was, we did talk about that maybe that she is the proto Lois, and that later on she had to change her identity or something like that. She becomes Lois Lane, right?
The issue again was we wanted to get Lois Lane and they wouldn't give her to us. And then when she came in season 4,
yeah,
remember there, oh my God, there was this huge,
yeah,
there was this huge thing about you can have her for 2 episodes and they'd have her for 3 and then you can have her for half a season. And to Peter Roth, to his credit, was like, fuck it, she's in the show now. And she's just not leaving. So
yeah, we never asked permission.
We didn't
again.
Ask.
It was every like, can we have another episode with Lois? And it's like, no. And it's like, okay, just one more. And then we just eventually she became part of the show and was never questioned again.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some good insight. Guys, I'm sure you're loving that right now. Thank you.
Erica's going to love that. It's going to make her feel good.
Yeah. No. And she was, she was fantastic. And, you know, we knew it. And
but that was the deal that wasn't, I didn't think she had a season regular deal. She was
not in the first season.
Yeah.
Until we were able to, I think they had a deal to make a deal with her, but there was not, we couldn't sort of make her a series regular then. And then we have which we can do when we talk about this show, because there's a piece of this show that was a huge fight with DC Comics as well.
Huge fight.
Ooh. Tell us about the huge DC fight that you had to go fisticuffs here.
At this point, there was a Superman feature floating around. By the way, we've been on the air. We're in season 3. We're a huge hit. There was a script that J.J. Abrams had written that McGee was going to direct. And in that script, Krypton did not blow up. So when we came to this episode and, you know, it was the memory of seeing Clark, you know, being put in the ship and sent away, we actually got into a sort of a heated argument with, was it Paul? Paul, I can't remember his last name now, who ran DC Comics.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, huge fan of the show, was sort of caught between the features and the show and trying to do it. And, you know, we got to a point where we're like, Paul, we're arguing 75 years of your mythology to you. The planet blew up. The whole point of the kryptonite it was just one of these weird, and then it kind of went away, but it was just, sometimes you would just get into these weird arguments with DC or with Warner's features or something, or, you know, over these things like, you can't have this character. We can never get Wonder Woman. We can never get Bruce Wayne. You know, we got Green Arrow, you know, but that was literally an argument of like, how you can't, this flashback. It's like, the planet blew up and Clark's memory is his mother and father putting him in the.
Yeah, but it doesn't blow up in the movie. It's like, what are you talking about?
Like who cares?
It's like, look,
I honestly.
You see the spaceship in the first episode of the show.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just made no sense.
You guys are like, we have a television show to run. I don't need these kind of conversations, okay?
Well, let me ask you, when you say heated, is this back and forth emails? Is this face to face?
No, these were phone conversations, basically, because we just got on the phone. And then I think at a certain point, we probably called Peter or the network and said, we're having these ridiculous conversations that we can't. Can somebody just deal with this? And then it just kind of went away.
Went away.
Yeah.
In these conversations, I think about this stuff. Like, is this, when you say heated conversations, are you getting like short with them and they're getting short with you? Like, are you kind of saying, this is ridiculous. What are we doing here?
Well, to Paul's credit, he was patiently trying to toe a line that he had been told to toe. And we were just like, dude, this makes no sense. Like, we're arguing 75 years of mythology to you. Like, we would be the one saying, no, we don't want the planet to blow up, and be like, are you crazy? Like, it's just, I said, I don't know what's going on here. Like, what is happening here?
Right.
Like, that is actually the premise of Superman. Like, if McGee wants to put that in his movie, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, you know what? You're not dealing probably with a lot of creatives. They're just like, you know, they're just sort of, they're there to say no. They're there to do a job, and they don't know how to articulate that. And they, whatever you're saying may sound great to you guys and make perfectly, you know, perfect sense. It's a different world. I think, you know, a lot of times I've talked about how now the studios, the decision making, it comes from marketing. You know what I mean? It doesn't come from creatives. Yeah. It doesn't come about like, you know, it's more about, will this sell? What do we need? How do we make this a hit?
Well, and the thing, what was always weird about at Warner's at that time was that we were a huge hit on the air. They had no Superman movie in development, and yet somehow they were dictating the terms of what we could or couldn't use, which was just ass backwards, was just totally backwards.
And now you got a Flash TV show for 7 years, and then you make a Flash movie, and no one gives a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody cares.
No. It's all about the dollars. The dollars.
Yeah.
To Memoria, one of my favorite episodes ever, directed by the great Miles Miller, who's with us right now.
There you go.
And it was written by both you guys, obviously, right?
Yes. Yep.
Now, first of all, you had never directed, right, Miles?
No, not since film school.
I remember you were so prepared. You knew what you wanted to do. And a lot of times, the best direction is just be simple and let the story tell itself. And let every, you know what I mean? And did you sort of just go in thinking, I'm going to allow everybody who does their job well to do their job and just tell the story and listen to people who know what they're talking about and yet be firm in what you want?
No, I'd say it's like, I think you could have a very clear vision of what you want to do as a director and get as much help as you can and be as collaborative as you can. And obviously, it's 3 years into the show. So in terms of acting, the actors definitely know what they're doing. So it's like, I definitely went in with a clear vision of what I wanted to do. But obviously, it's about collaboration. And everyone was 3 years into a show, was moving like a machine. But I think it certainly, for me, was a chance to do what I wanted to do as a director and really like storyboard everything and have a really clear idea going into each scene and then let the scene happen and let the actors do their best work. I think it was one of those, you know, Glenn Winter's amazing DP, really helped in terms of stepping up with the creativity of the flashbacks and things like that. And obviously as a showrunner, you come in, there's an expectation as well. Everyone's like really wanting to do a good job and impress you. And, you know, everyone's Rob Mayer, who was in, built that incredible set. It was just, everyone was on their A game. Because I think they felt it was also like a really important episode in the mythology of the show. So, I mean,
I was going to say also, the creator of the show is directing this episode. Know your fucking lines.
Yes, that's also true.
Yeah.
So you have that. And it's something that we never think about when you go on, as the creator and showrunner going onto the set, we always think, oh, it's great. And everyone's like, you know, scared or like, you know, it's a different vibe when you come onto a set, which you don't. We don't even think about, but other people do when you're there.
I have memories of you telling us to stop screwing around more than a few times because you were so prepared. Yeah, you were so prepared, and you came in with this vision. And any us being distracted or distracting you from it, it was just like, guys, come on, we're trying to do something great here. I wish I would have known that then.
Well, no, it's weird because it's like it's also coming in and I'm a super intense person anyway, and you don't know the vibe of what's, and it's a lot of, you know, obviously I'm nervous as well. It's the first time I've been directing. So it's like, there's an expectation for me to do a good job, but everyone else is just living their lives. So you come into this, you parachute in and it's hard, right?
Yeah.
And I'm the sort of the stern teacher is like, what the fuck is going on?
I think for me, I think the best opportunity, at least when you're coming back for the first episode of the season, people are coming off some bit of rest. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when you're coming in and you're like, hey, we're back, let's do it, there's a frenzy to it. But when you're at this point in the season, there's also a little bit of like,
oh my gosh.
Oh,
episode
man.
19. I didn't think I realized how late the episode was.
No.
Yeah. Too. Like I thought it was like 14 or 13. I have a funny story, which I just remembered. So season 3, they were hammering, even though we were a hit, they were still hammering the shit out of us on the budget. And I remember they were trying to cut days or I think this one we had built in some extra days just because it was a bigger episode and getting hammered and hammered and we and Miles went dark for like 3 days. I like didn't fucking hear from him for 3 days. I finally got it. I go, dude, where have you been? And he goes, I didn't want you to tell me the budget was cut.
He was avoiding you.
I'm not gonna fucking call you. I'm not doing it. And what's funny was we actually the person who ended up horse trading was because John Schneider directed the next episode, and there was a and I remember we had to cut days out of that episode and give them to Miles. And but Greg Beeman had directed an episode like two before, and there was a Pete Chloe subplot that because there was like, oh, John's episode's going to be short. But Greg goes, I have this Pete Chloe subplot that does not fit in my episode. And we're like, great, that's going in John's episode. And that's what happened.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this. Wow. Quickly, Miles, who was screwing around? I don't remember screwing around. Was it me?
Tell the story, Tom. Do you remember the story?
Oh, I remember the story. There's a shot.
Yeah.
There's a shot where being in that tank was fucking horrible. Excuse my F-bomb. And, I think we were tired of screwing around, and the big crane camera shot was taking forever, whatever. And so Steve Wardrobe and I thought it would be funny that take because it's Clark naked. And I don't know if it was his idea or mine, but we did it. And we took some tube socks and we put it in my crotch. And so when they came down on Clark in his little skivvies, he was very alien-esque, if you know what I mean.
A significant bulge.
I think it took so long to get the shot that you had to use it because it was like, but I remember that being like, I'm like, oh,
I remember also being a dick. It's like, no, it was like, because I think, oh, my video keeps screwing up.
You're right.
I think there's an executive on set and they came up and said, have you seen his bulge? I said, what are you talking about? He's seen the ball. It's just not real. So it's like,
oh,
what?
Oh, my God. Miles, what I like about this is it had nothing to do with me. I'm not the one messing up.
No.
Yes.
It was Tom.
Yes. It was welling in his bulge.
It was Tom.
We just wanted to clear that up.
It was the bulge. It was like, what the hell is going on? Because I didn't know. Anyway, it was hilarious now. Oh, it was like at the time. Because it was a big day. Like, it was like a huge day. We had one day in that tank room. It was like, oh, my God. And one chance to blow the tank with the
bulge.
Did you do that, Michael? Did you make the water go?
Did you break the tank?
I'm the one who broke the tank and the water came out. Yeah.
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 That was a one take wonder. So,
yeah.
It was great.
You're welcome.
No, I mean, it was a really... really good to see it again. I mean, so many great, you guys are so good. That scene with Martha and Clark at the end, you and John. I mean, oh, it's amazing.
It blew me away. I have to say that I don't get, especially for something I'm watching and I haven't seen this episode in a long time, but those two scenes, and I don't know if you knew this, but there was a parallel. I've talked about it, but like, you know, my father was never one to say, I love you. My father was never one to say any kind of I'm proud of you or anything like that. So those scenes that I drew from, it was heavy, and I didn't realize how heavy it was until I watched it. And I forgot that I was watching myself, and really just, I don't know if it was written, but when he comes to me at the end to try and hug me and I say, no. And I just walk away and I was just like, oh my God. And then when Martha Kent, you know, a mother's love or whatever, I was just almost in tears. And I was like, wow, this really affected me. The performances were great. And, you know, that comes from the director. I mean, you could say actors, but you knew what you wanted. It was in the writing. And I'll tell you this, if there's good writing, it makes it so much easier for us. And it was something that we didn't have to really work that hard. They were easy to learn because the story was so compelling. And your direction was good. You weren't that invasive at all. You were just like subtle. You'd give notes when it was needed, when it was necessary, you'd move on. It was just, I was very comfortable. I remember being very comfortable on set. So thank you.
That's amazing, Michael. That's great to hear. I mean, it was a great, great experience for me. I mean, amazing. Just like,
what's your favorite scene in the show? What was the one scene where you like, oh, that would be on my reel?
There are four scenes in that show, at least. There's a scene with and the boy, Wayne, is incredible, right? The young Lex. Yeah. The scene with him and John with the box.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh my God, that's a great. And I love the birthday party, no one shows up. Mm-hmm. The scene with you, Tom, and Martha and Jonathan at the and Lionel at the house. We're so creepy and it's so interesting. And then the scene with you and Lionel in the office at the end, it's just like, wow.
When it finally lands on Lionel that he believes Lex, when he says it's a mom, and he goes, oh, that whole thing, I couldn't stop looking at him. It was just such a good performance.
And my favorite scene, I think, is, what have you done?
What yes. have you done? And he smacks him. And I was just like, I got goosebumps just now thinking about it. It was, I kept thinking, how many times was it written for him to say, what have you done? Or is it something he added to crescendo? What have you done? What have you done? What have you done? What was it? Do you remember that?
No, he added it.
He did.
Yeah. 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 And it, it definitely adds as well in the scene with you and him in the office. Yeah. I remember that was really, really emotional that day.
What is it, Miles? Like, I watched an episode like that. I'm like, wow, he killed it. That was a brilliant episode. Why didn't you direct again?
It's hard.
Weirdly, I got some advice from someone I really respected who said, you shouldn't direct any more TV. You should just wait for a feature. And it was one of the worst pieces of advice I've ever received in my life. And then we were just so busy doing other things. We're always doing a movie, always doing something else. And it was like, it's a tough act to follow because the script was so good. The story was so compelling. It was a, you know, really big piece of mythology. And we were just, but yeah, I really regret not directing more. It was such a lot. I mean, having had more shows and different casts, this cast was so special and such beautiful people, you know, seriously, you know, I wish I directed a lot more.
You can, you know, why don't you direct an episode of Wednesday?
Yeah, well, it's all about time. I definitely want to direct more in the future. I mean, it's part of our plan, hopefully, to do that and
yeah,
maybe direct a movie. So it's like definitely.
Well, the other thing is, and maybe our audience doesn't know this, when you direct, if you're lucky, you have a week of prep, then, you know, more than a week of shooting, and then to edit it, it's a month-long commitment that it's not easy to do. And that's why sometimes actors do the first, the last one or things. But it's not just that. 5, 6, 7, 10 days. It's
no, and now, and you know, when you're doing, you know, and when we did Into the Badlands, Miles directed a block of that, and all in it was a 50-day shoot. Oof. You know, it was like a movie. So wow.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of because now you block shoots, so you're shooting two episodes at a time, not just one. So,
this episode that's great is the music.
Music's great.
You know, there's that melody that they play, that Mark Snow, there's a composer, he did a really great job. Again, everyone just stepped up for me, which is, you know, a reason it's good as well. But that's, I think, makes it distinctive. That melody is so, like, gut-wrenching.
How many calls did you get afterwards saying how much, praising the episode?
He loved it, but...
He did.
It was... Yeah. Yeah.
But what? But what?
No, it was great. I mean, it was, you know, definitely people responding to the episode in the way you know, I certainly wanted, and I still look at it, and it's like, I watched it on my big screen last night. It was like, wow, I have forgotten a lot of it. And it was like really just so emotional and so, you know, goosebumps all the time, right? I mean, it was pretty surprising, like how emotional it was.
Have you shown your kids the episode?
I haven't. Well, I thought maybe I had that thought last night, like they should, I'm gonna sit down and make them watch it. Cause it's like, it's so, you guys are so good, and it's so strong in every way in terms of story, performance, look. I mean, it's just really is a great episode of the show.
Yeah.
I just don't, there's no wasted moment in the way it came together. And
no.
And the gravitas of it. And, you know, I was halfway through and I actually looked, I'm like, how much more is this? And I was only halfway through. I was like, no way. Like, you know, usually you get a couple crescendos, but this, like every single one of them, it was really fun to watch. And I didn't remember a lot of it, especially the Lex thing with the baby.
I actually, it's funny, I told Miles when I was watching it, I totally forgot the birthday party flashback. I was like, what's this scene? I was like, wow, this is a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this is good, you know, but it's also a great Glover episode, obviously. He's probably the guy in the most scenes, right? Because it's little Lex and you and then, you do what I loved about that birthday scene is the one time where you see, like, oh, Lionel loved Lex. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like he was actually being a good dad and trying to comfort him and give him strength and, you know, really buck him up. And then it all went sour when he thought he'd killed, you know, when he thought he killed Julie. I mean, it was amazing. So, it was great. And the mother stuff, you know, with Lex's fucked up mother. And then you've got, you know, Clark hearing his mother's voice for the first time and stuff, which is great.
She was great too. Those scenes where, I mean, you had to be very careful, I'm sure, and particular, but for the flashbacks to make John look younger, it worked.
I know, right? It's just basically a wig. I mean, it's no like CG de-aging. It's like a completely old school makeup effect, right?
Yeah, it is. The lighting and everything worked. And those scenes with the mother and Lionel, it was just heartbreaking. She's like, you know, I don't want him to, you know.
But the boy is so believable as you, mm-hmm. Wayne, and he shaved his head. It's like he was all in.
Well, if he didn't you wouldn't have hired him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he still had to sit there with John Glover. You know, that's not easy. I mean, John makes it look easy, but that's intimidating. I mean, I think I got a lot more out of this episode having watched it now with children of my own.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, Clark didn't have kids. So like if I had kids then, I don't know. That's a slippery slope but I mean, at the end, I was like seeing if anybody was going to watch me cry, you know, and I was sitting and I was by myself, but it was very moving. Very moving.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing going in as a director is it's intimidating for me to go up there as well because we spend so much time in LA writing the scripts. So it's when you go in and parachute in as a director, even if it's the creator of the show, it's still like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, the actors are gonna test me as well, and I want to do a good job for them. So it's that balance as you find it as you go and earning people's respect as you do it. Is really a really interesting process. What did Ryan think
of what of Memoriam?
Yeah,
it was great. It was I mean, like, I was really surprised by all the flashbacks and like how I mean, mm-hmm. like when it gets real emotional, like because I mean, I get like what it's like the scenes like with Lionel and Lex, like Michael and I were talking earlier, like those feel like really like good scenes, and we're like, yeah, that's because the adults are talking. You know, like,
right. Yes, it's that so dichotomy. It's that dichotomy when you're getting into adults and real stuff, even if it's with the younger crowd and it's real stuff, it works. So whenever it's like, it's not, you know, whenever it's a storyline and talking about the past and building character, and this show built so much, you have so much that you feel for Lex. You really like. I asked Tom, and he's like, yeah, I really feel for Lex at this point. And that's what you want. You want them not to hate you. And that was always something we talked about. It's like, hey, you know, we've got a long way to go, 7 seasons or whatever. We've got to, you know, pick our moments. And you guys did a great job of doing that.
But you also see how manipulative Clark is. I mean, he's like in there, like trying to manipulate the whole situation. And then Lionel does the double cross. I mean, it's like Clark is right in there being really nefarious.
Yeah, I love the, and I totally forgot that too. I love that Clark went to Lionel and then Lionel just totally called Clark on his bullshit. Like, no, dude, you're trying to fucking hide shit too.
Yeah.
And then I thought that was great. I was like, it was really good.
We love having you on, and we've gone even longer than we thought we would because it was just fun. But look, you guys got to come back. Memoria is one of the best episodes, and we want to bring you back. Season 4 is going to start, you know, down the road. And I don't remember anything about season 4. So if there's any good episode.
Same.
So we'll figure it out. And when there's good episodes that come along, maybe you could chime in and say, hey, we want to come in on that one. Or we'll.
Yeah.
This all happened because the last time we talked, you guys mentioned you wanted to be on for this episode.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's any other ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the only, funnily enough, the last episode we wrote for the show was the opener of season 4. It was. That was the last episode we wrote because then we got just busy and then we were doing other things and stuff. So that was, So,
is that why season 4 wasn't good? Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm just saying it's the last episode our names are on.
I know. I'm kidding. I don't even know if season 4 is good because I have to watch them now.
No, because I know you guys didn't leave then because when I started directing later on, I would always make a point to reach out to you guys and just be like, I know you guys look over the drafts. Can you please look over it a little bit sooner? Because every time you guys looked over a draft, it always got better. I think I've told you this before, but
Well, thank you.
Well, it's their baby.
No,
you know?
Thank you.
It was your baby. So you know,
absolutely.
What you want.
No, 100%.
Yeah. So, their season 4, Lois Lane came in. That's kind of the big, that was the big thing. And then and then Jensen Ackles was there. And then it ended with it was the Crystal story that ended with the Fortress of Solitude.
I wanted to ask you, you know, because we get a lot of grief and Lana's football coach is dating her and she's in high school and all that stuff. What was the kind of, how did you get away with that?
Different era.
Yeah, it's a different era is how I would describe that. So
not something we do now.
No. And it was, But
I mean, we talked about this last time about the Lana character in terms of like, we definitely, as the father of daughters, it's definitely something I'm very conscious of in terms of her character.
Yeah.
And choices we would have made
differently
now as parents, and also different time. So it's like, I look at some stuff, it's like, oh God, we really did that. It was acceptable at that point.
But well, Michael's a big fan of anytime Chloe and Lana get in a scene, the two of them, he loves those scenes. So.
Well, I don't know about that. But you know, there was an episode that we watched just before called Truth. And I actually, you know, they thought it was right down the middle. I liked it a little more than they did, because I like people telling the truth and Lex saying he wants love.
Yeah,
And all this stuff. And I found it interesting. But there was one character which I found interesting, that he tells the truth that he's in love with another football player, or he has a crush on another football player.
Yeah.
So that was kind of brought up a little bit. And I thought that was cool. I wish there was a little more story to it, but you couldn't really do that, where it was a little more like, I mean, it wasn't bashing at all, but it was just a little bit vague. But like, what she's doing has consequences. Her forcing the truth on everybody has consequences, and secrets that are that aren't meant for people, and you have to protect people's privacy. And so
it's thematic. It's just, I know we got, sometimes the network could say anything too controversial, they'd be really like, we did a story later on about a kid who's an illegal immigrant, and that was like a huge deal for them. Like, you can't do it. It's not going to happen.
It was Tyler Posey as a kid who later went on and did Teen Wolf. Yeah. That's I think that was season six, maybe.
Yeah.
I remember that. There was the idea of that, if you think about it, Superman's the ultimate illegal alien, and it was kind of playing on that idea.
Thank you guys. That was awesome. I know you guys love hearing from these guys. They have so much insight and stuff that I didn't even know. I didn't know about Tom's Bulge, and now the world knows it. So, Battle of the Bulge. Now it's time for the hotline. You guys know the number, 213-JET-CUTE. We're going to start with patron privilege. I love our patrons, patreon.com/Talkville. Join today, help the show out, and ask questions.
Hey, everybody, it's Michael P. from Texas.
Michael P., right?
Rosie, you mentioned in an episode of Talkville a ways back that you had a few props from the set of the show. In the episode Memorial, we see a really cool prop that we've seen time and time again now, Lex's famous lead-lined box. I was curious if you have any stories to share about the props that you did keep. Maybe this box is one of them, but I'd love to hear more. Thanks.
Man, I wish I had that box. I don't know why I didn't think about it. I didn't think it'd be that big of a deal, but I wish I had that box. That box is pretty dope, and it was solid. Yeah. I remember looking at it going, this would be good for my guitar picks. I have Lex Luthor glasses that I always drank from the bar. I have ship keys, original ship keys. I have a little thing that got into my emergency room. What are those called? The little, you know, in Lionel's, in Lex's house, in his mansion, he has a little room that you go to protect yourself. A little
escape, panic room.
Panic room. I have trench coats. I should probably, for charity or something, sell those trench coats. I don't need them. I have trench coats and suits.
Not long ago, I worked on a film, and this guy came up to me. He goes, "Hey, Tom." And I was like, "Hey, how's it going?" And he's like, "You might not remember me, but I was an assistant prop master on Smallville." And I go, "Yeah, I don't remember you." And kind of laugh. And he goes, "Do you know that at the end of the show, he was able to purchase the whole collection of props that were left for $6,000, and he resold them for $10,000. And the guy, after he made the deal, goes, "I'm going to be able to sell this for so much more." But he was like, the $6,000 for me at the time was good.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Hey, guys. It's Lana Rhymes with Banana W from Bakersfield, California. I have a silly question for a very serious and excellent episode, Memoria. I find it interesting that Lana is delivering tax papers in the middle of the night when Lex is sleeping. So, it was an awesome episode. Just something silly I noticed.
I liked it. I don't know. I think maybe she's kind of crushing on Lex or something. I don't know. But it's weird. But you had to.
It was strange. I mean,
maybe it wasn't that late. Maybe it was like 9:30 or 10.
It could have been.
She was working at the town at close. She brought the papers over. I'll buy it.
Somebody had to. I don't know. There was probably a discussion. Like, somebody had to pick him up and like take care of him, and they decided
it's too bad she wasn't like, Lex, you need to get down. I need you to sign these papers.
Jesus.
Hi, this is Shannon Fofanin from Delaware calling about the episode Memoria. In this episode, they're in some sort of kryptonite water contraption to recall the memories. And I was just wondering, it looks absolutely uncomfortable and possibly cold, especially since you are sans clothing. So just curious on how it felt and if they did anything to keep you comfortable during those scenes. Thanks.
You know what,
I
mean, Shannon?
I don't want to...
I just remember, like...
You can't get out. Once you're in it, there to get out of it, you understand that there's no time for that. Production ends at the time. So, I mean, poor us, right? Like, I don't mean to just complain about stuff like that, but you're kind of stuck there on a metal thing. You're strapped down. It's not fun. You just try to keep yourself entertained and, you know.
I feel like I always watch the show and I'm like, oh, I felt like we were in that tank way longer than it probably should have taken.
Oh, for sure.
It should have taken. But, you know, that's how.
Well, because you would think that they got those two huge crane shots in this that we talk about with Miles with the funny sort of junk thing. And you would like to think that that whole crane move could just be ready for you when you get in there. It's always an adjustment. There's always something.
Gotta make
it's not
it
a computer.
Perfect. It's got to look perfect. It's not ever as easy as you think. Liz, why don't you tell us something that we don't know? Or ask us something we don't know.
Hey, this is Liz from Denver. It's one of my favorite episodes. And I was wondering why, you know, couldn't Lionel just pay some kids to show up to Lex's birthday party? I mean, would it have been that hard? He could just be like, hey, you know, show up and I'll give you a pony.
He wanted Lex to feel that distance and loneliness like he does.
I don't know. I mean, Al and Miles talk about how we got to see John actually trying to be a father. I think maybe he was, you know, he was going to get to the party when he got there after his business meeting and he realizes no other kids are there and he tries to help his son out. I mean, I don't think it was a setup. I'd like to think it wasn't a setup.
My name's Jake. I'm from Michigan. I'm calling about the episode Memoria, season 3, episode 19. Obviously, in this episode, we find out Lillian killed Julian as a baby. So do you think Lillian knew that Lex took the blame for that? And if so, why do you think she allowed him to?
I think she probably killed herself shortly after is what I'm thinking. So... I don't know. That's some deep subtext, brother. I don't know that.
No.
That would have been another storyline. Like, he was trying to protect her, and she says Lex did this, and he was like, I think in her state of mind, she would have said, no, I did it. But remember, she was like, no, you wake the baby or something, or she wasn't really there. I don't think she knew what happened because she was like having out-of-body experience.
I think Lex, I think Lionel... after slapping Lex, went to her and probably lost it and killed her. That's what I think.
I don't think you're wrong or had her killed.
This is Daniel McIntyre from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Long, long time massive fan. My question is for you, Michael. How did it feel doing that scene with John Glover after he found out officially that you hadn't killed Julian, that your mother was the one that killed Julian? And that scene to me between the two of you was so powerful. I just wanted to know your thoughts on that. When you told him that mom would have been the lamb of the slaughter, and he looked at you and said, son, had I known, things would have been different. And you said, maybe you would have loved me. I just wanted to know your thoughts on that, Michael. That was a very powerful scene.
Yeah, it was intense. I mean, it certainly helps when you have John Glover there with you. You know, you feel safe. You feel like you could be vulnerable. You feel like you could just really be. And it wasn't hard. Those scenes weren't hard for me. I think comedy's a lot harder. I think when I'm dramatically, it just seems like it's easier for me. It comes easier. I just get emotions from personal experience. John, what do you got, John?
Hi, this is John from Chicago. Now I have a question. So we're watching, and there's a scene where Lionel Luther is telling young Lex about this box that was forged of armor, out of the armor of St. George. And it's a very stark difference. It's almost like he's being a good father. And it's almost startling to see, given the portrayal that he's had throughout the series. So I was just curious what you guys thought about that. Love the show. Love the podcast. Thank you. Bye.
I love you. Thanks for being fast. I thought that was that's what he does as an actor, and that's the complicated character of Lionel. He can feel like he's becoming a better father at times, and then completely the juxtaposition of the evil Lionel. He could be so kind. So it's cunning, it's manipulative. You don't know what you're going to see, but it's always interesting, isn't it?
He's always acting from a place of he thinks he's
validated.
Turning Lex
he's
into
right.
a man. Yeah, he's. I'm doing this for you, Lex, as he electrocutes you.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, this is Jonah Johnson from South Carolina. Just finished season 3, episode 19, Memoria. Wow, what a heavy, heavy episode. And a couple things to say. So Lex recovered his memory of his mom killing his brother. So that means for his whole life after that, he repressed that memory, meaning this whole time, along with Lionel, he thought that he had killed his brother. That's
he put it in a box.
Right? That's... Okay, this episode was just so heavy. I mean, it had me and my friend here crying in each other's arms.
Wow.
Aw.
That's really nice of you to say. You know, it was heavy. It was, it's sad that Lex had to carry that with him his whole life up till his, you know, in his 20s. I think a lot of people have repressed memories. I know I do. I've done therapy enough where I was like, wow, I blocked that out. How did I block that out? Well, it's defense mechanisms. It's like your body protects you. And so I think that's what happens. And, you know, I'm glad he found out that it wasn't his fault. That's what I will say. Caroline.
Hi, guys. This is Caroline from Springfield, Missouri.
Caroline.
I just watched season 3, episode 19, Memoria. And I just got to say that Michael's performance was excellent about remembering those memories, and it was just fantastic. And at the very end, Clark and his mom and having kind of that special moment. It's always hard for an adopted parent to deal with the original parent kind of coming back into the picture, even if it was just a memory. So I thought that was a really touching scene, and the music was great. Thank you,
Carolyn. Thank you very much. It was really, you know, again, I say it, it's got to be everything coming together. The cinematography, the lighting, the writing, the acting, the sound, everything was great in this episode. So I give credit to everybody else. And I was also good. Thank you. Here we go, Reese.
Hey, Tom, Michael, and Ryan. It's Reese from Burbank again.
Reese.
The emotional beats in the show just keep getting better and better. And obviously, every actor has just improved with the seasons, getting more comfortable with their characters. And the end of this episode with Tom talking to Martha about wishing that Laura had been able to meet her just really, it moves me more and more every time I watch it. So I wanted to ask you guys, with these more emotional story arcs that are going on, do you guys remember having any coaching? Did you guys have specific actors or acting consultants, so to speak, that would help you if you were finding it hard to get into certain moments or certain more difficult scenes? Thanks so much. Love the show. Keep it up.
Tom?
Yeah. I mean, I did not have an acting coach during the series. There were probably times where maybe I would make a call to a showrunner or a writer and just, you know, ask for a little more like insight. We used to do these things on Smallville. We would have tone meetings, and they could sometimes be 8 hours long, where it was all about what the tone was for each scene and for the episode we were going for. And so you usually had people around you who, if you were questioning something or, but a lot of it was the great people around us who created an environment where we could feel vulnerable, like you said about John.
Safe. Yep.
You know, a director who was willing to listen and not just like, I don't care, just go do your thing. A lot, you know, you hear a lot about actors not wanting to be spoken to, or directors don't want to talk to actors because they don't want to get in trouble, especially on television. But I always felt like if I had to, I could say, hold on, I need a second, or can you help me out here, or something like that.
I agree. Thomas the Leaf Blower asks, did you guys know there's a whole subplot that just got scratched in the episode? There's like 6 minutes worth of deleted scenes on YouTube with the whole plot about Lana being bugged by the FBI and the Talon. And then she goes to Lex and asks them to buy her out. I mean, Michael, you shot a scene with it, and it's just crazy that a whole subplot could just be cut out of an episode like that. What do you guys think about that situation? I have no idea. I've never heard about that.
Is that the paperwork that Lana shows up with then?
I guess I would guess that would have made more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was cut out.
Thank you.
I have no idea. I have to go back and watch that. Ryan, you go back and watch it. Thanks, Thomas.
I've seen it now.
Wow. I've seen. Brianna, think Lex would have been a different person had his brother Julian survived and they had grown up together in the same household. Lionel would have found a way to get us, you know, pit us against each other. Or, you know, it never would have been a normal childhood. There was no way we were going to come out of that unscathed. Rosenbaum rating.
And now,
Ryan.
Rosenbaum 2.
Rating.
Tom.
2.5.
2.5. I'm going to give it 2.5. Death and save count.
D. death and save count.
Through 19 episodes in season 3, 28 dead. Did I say that? 29 saved. Series 87 dead, 99 saved. Ryan's favorite scene.
Do I have to? I have to pick one?
You didn't pick one yet?
Well, I picked this one, but tough. Like...
This is tough.
No, I got it.
Can we guess again for 2 points?
Yeah, I got mine.
All right. Go ahead, Tom. Don't say anything, Ryan.
Mine is when it's the Lex Lionel scene where he says, "Mom killed Julia."
I say that's the same one. Ryan?
Yeah, let's not beat around the bush. That was it.
All right. We both got 2 points. Nicely done.
No, but I want to like just also shout out like the reveal of figuring out like all the flashbacks. The kid was fantastic. Like those were so good. And John was so good. And like, I wanted to like lump those all together into one. And then the end with Clark and Martha, that was very, very touching. Great. And I thought she did a wonderful job and it was just very, very good. But yeah, it was that I felt things like I felt the regret coming off of John. And that scene with you and him.
Yeah,
I did too.
I was like, oof.
It was intense. All right, that's it for this episode. Stick around next week and wish us luck as we get into season 3, episode 20, Talisman, directed by John Schneider. He's in this episode. Let's take the discussion online. Let us know your thoughts on the episode over on our socials at Talkville Podcast. Show support for the podcast, if you will, by joining Patreon at patreon.com/Talkville. We really appreciate you. Without you, we could not do the show. And more information is in my link tree on Instagram at the Michael Rosenbaum. Cameos. Tom's also in Cameo. You can find us at cons. Find us. Hang out with us. We had a Patreon hang in DC. It was great with all our patrons. There was like 30 of them. And we love you. And remember, folks, always hold on to Smallville. We'll see you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Now it's time for the big shout outs. The big, big shout outs. Our top tier patrons, patreon.com/Talkville. Could not do it without you guys. You know that. You're the reason we're here. And we love you. And Tom, take us off. Take us off.
I would like to start us off with Nikki G, Lee N P, Raj C. Thank you for your long message. Santiago M, Lita Lisa, Thomas Elite Blur, Sophie M, Betsy D, Abhi P, Ray H, Karen Apple M, Danielle B, 99 more, Leilani, and Brett G. Always hold on to Smallville, Esteban G, DJ Kento in the house, Garrett W, Kimberly L, Tom N, Jason W, Osama, what up, A, Lana Rhymes with Banana, W, Nancy D, Brian G, Sarah W, Amanda R, Teddy127, Michael P, Theo M, Ryan R, Jordan M, Hillary B, Randy B, of course you are, Craig G, Christy R, Karen P, Jorel, hi Deb, Heather and Craig, great meeting you in DC, Nico P, I made Talkville say butts, Brian H, Eric K, Kristen B, Craig C, Nanine W, Stephanie K, Darth Achilles, Finky, Tamara H, Stephen F, damn, who's that, Jeanette E, Deadvid, General Zod, Big D, Doug R.
Carlos C. Gosh, I thought you were going to read all of them, for God's sakes, which is fine.
I was thinking about it.
Doing and just waved to the camera. Tommy Z, Boston 68, Ken the Limerick Guy, Corey L., Mr. Home Arcade. What are you playing, Pac-Man? Little Q-Bert? Amanda K., Jesse C., Claire M., D. Brown, Karenera M., Eldon Supremo, Dan, good seeing you when you were in L.A., Leslie V., McBurts, Ginger Moose, Christoph S., Michelle M., Drew, Brittany S., Marisol P., Michael Kang doesn't blink. Why don't you say Michael Kang doesn't blink, Ryan? You like doing that. Get your
Michael Kang.
Oh, his mic's not on. Sebastian F., Sourpuss Cranky Pants, Matthew and Lincoln B., The Coopers, Marion Louise L., CGO, Cindy C., Nikki L., Big Bash Bosch's Lemon Pledge. They brought me Lemon Pledge at the con in Orlando. Thank you, Shannon.
Do you use it?
Yeah, my butt.
Can you take that on the plane?
I got to tell you what happened to me while I was peeing a few minutes ago. Brian S., Tina E., Matt R., Jen T., Cassie B., Felicia R., Dan M., DS, the RN, JS, Rachel D., Ginger Primus, and Nate D. When you're rich, you aren't crazy or eccentric. Paul W., Jonas 1, Samantha S., Derek Starkville, Spicy Brown says, sounds like my pants. Carrie Ann, the Alexander Castle, Daryl E., Kyle F., Charlene A., and Spicy Chicken.
Oh, yeah. Love me some Spicy Chicken.
We thank you guys dearly. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We hope you have a great week. Good day.